Good morning, Lorena.
Well, hello, Mandy.
Now, I want you to keep yourself under some semi-control today. We are discussing football, and you know your tendency to lose it.
I think what you mean is to show how much I know about football and educate people about my thoughts and opinions on the subject.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. So I don't want to hear any of it. I don't want any graphs. I don't want to hear about...
I'll put my video away.
I don't want stats.
It's disappointing. I'll have to leave the champion data at home.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. So, because it's all about footy today, mate. Do you like that?
Natural. It sounds like you say it all the time.
I so do. So we're talking about HR going into the world of sport.
World of sport.
So
I really wanted to sing then, but I restrained myself.
It's amazing.
See, it's working already, that little pep talk you gave me.
Yeah, little pep. Pep it up. Janelle is aloft.
Mm-hmm.
And,
off she goes.
Off she goes. So I shall see you soon.
I'll look forward to it.
All right. Mm. Hi, Lorena.
Hello, Mian.
Our guest is here as previously mentioned.
It's amazing. It's amazing how that works.
It is. It is. Now, we should say we're in sunny Sydney today.
We are.
Which is sunny.
It is beautiful, Sydney.
No, Melbourne and Sydney are not that far away, and yet there seems to be a dramatic difference in weather temperature.
Yeah, we've left winter, we've arrived in summer.
Dating the obvious. Who do we have here, Lorena?
We are lucky to have Mr. Scott Delby, the Human Resources Manager from the Sydney Swans Football Club.
Yes. Hello, Scott.
Hello, all. Thank you very much for having me on board. It's like a different climate up in Sydney.
Yeah, for sure.
Totally different.
I'm a little bit biased, though, given the AFL and the majority of teams down there. But
started already, Lorena. Yeah. Okay, bring
Sydney
it on.
Sydney pride.
Fine.
Yeah. Good on you, Scott.
And, Scott, I believe Sydney absolutely killed Essendon. Don't know why I wanted to bring that up all of a sudden, Lorena.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, no. Well, we've got a big one tonight as well. So we've got the Cats tonight.
Yes.
Fingers crossed for that, and then off to Adelaide if we're good enough tonight. So
when people listen to this, they'll know whether, or not.
Know the
Do you
result.
Want to give us a prediction, and then we can see how footy smart you are? Anyway, enough about football.
Yes.
Let's talk about football from a HR perspective, Scott. Maybe just start first. Like, how long have you been in football human resources for?
Interestingly... From a sporting interest point of view, growing up in Sydney, rugby league was more my background.
Mm.
So I played rugby league as a kid. When I realised I wasn't too good at that, I took up refereeing, which my uncle had done. So background really more in rugby league. My grandparents were members of the SCG Trust, though. And the Swannies and the cricket get played at the SCG. So I'd come along to the odd Swannies game. And then I'd commenced studying at uni in HR, and Sydney Uni, which is where I studied, had a great program where they linked in graduates to potential roles that they thought might be of interest. And at that time, I was sort of deciding whether or not I'd continue to study and study further, and was potentially going to move down more that industrial relations law side of things, but ultimately decided I'd had a fair trek at uni already. so I was keen to explore what opportunities there were in employment. And the Sydney Swans role became available. And what the Swans used to do was hold that HR spot for grads, which obviously I was a beneficiary of, and my predecessor was as well. Now, though, given the changing landscape of HR, particularly in the industry, with some of the challenges that we've had over the years, sorry to keep talking about Essendon, but things like integrity measures, governance measures.
Yeah. Right where it hurts. It's okay.
This isn't deliberate. I hadn't planned the attack, no.
Now you're like just got your foot to her throat.
That's right. Yeah.
It's going for the kill.
Yes. I'm enjoying the whole thing.
So these days I don't think having graduates move in and run the HR program is probably the best way. And I'm fortunate now that in the years that I've been at the Swans, I've now got an assistant, which is fantastic. So HR as a component of business within the AFL has grown substantially. And now most clubs, certainly I think every club has at least one HR person. Many clubs have multiple. So it shows the importance that HR has in sport and in the AFL. And that's a really important thing. But to answer your question, it wasn't sort of a targeted approach. I didn't sort of go out actively seeking a role in at the Swans or in HR. But my interest in sport and being a lover of sport and my passion for HR, obviously, it's a good partnership. And I've been there ever since. So I commenced 2011. So this is my...
Wow.
We count in seasons. So this is my seventh season.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time. And as I said, the role's changed substantially from when I started as a sort of HR assistant through now to... you know, being involved in right sort of across the board at the business, which is fantastic.
Well, you said before most clubs now have one, at least one HR person. How many employees would be at a football club on average?
It varies club to club. I think the Swans are probably about mid-range in terms of size, and we've got about 100 staff.
Okay.
Plus the 46 players on top of that. So the way that that's split in terms of HR responsibility is that you've got your commercial areas and your football department more broadly, and that sort of falls under my remit. But the 46 players, there's a player welfare and development manager, and that looks after a lot of the HR functions for the players. So that the players in themselves can be a lot of work. So particularly with the main emphasis there is around ensuring that the players have a plan B, because we know that... even a great HR playing career, but a football playing career.
I like that HR playing career.
That'd be good. But that a great player retires in their mid-30s, and that's young. So clearly you need a plan B, so something to do once you're not playing anymore. And there's only so many coaching roles and roles in the media.
Yeah, I was going to say commentating roles.
Not everyone can do that.
No.
So a lot of the boys are involved in, you know, be it a trade or studying at uni or depending on their interest, you know, some are doing graphic design. So depending on what they're interested in, it's important that they've got skills outside of just playing football. And Dennis Carroll, who's our player welfare manager, does a fantastic job in terms of making sure they're upskilled and that when they do finish playing, for whatever reason, be it retirement or injury or, you know, form, that they've actually got a plan B and can actually move into some employment.
That's fascinating, isn't it? So I'm older than you two, and I still remember that players had a profession.
Yeah.
The playing was the extra bit, as opposed to the playing being your profession, and then you had to think about what you were doing after. Mm. And a friend of mine was in love with half of the cricketers and football players and used to always know what the other thing was that they were doing, you know, whether they were ophthalmologist or it was always really unusual, or the hairdresser. You know what I think of when you say hairdresser is Renee King.
Yeah. Great mullet.
Wasn't he Collingwood?
Yeah, I think he played at Essendon for a while too.
Oh, there you go.
We had Warwick Kappa for a while.
Oh, well, there you go.
That's a hairdresser as well. So how does this work? Tell me how this all works. Does this fall into your, because it's totally foreign to us, fall into your learning and development strategy, or how does all that sit, the priorities for the players?
Yeah, well, as I said, the players largely are dealt with through the football program and through our player welfare manager. So I'm far less hands-on on that and much more hands-on on the remainder of the staff. And that's actually the majority of people in the business.
Yeah.
So that extends from sort of your coaching staff, which is more that footy-centric space, through to your sort of traditional teams that you'd have at any business. So your accounts, and, you know, the various, you know, in our case, there's a few specific ones around sort of membership and sponsorship. But effectively, your marketing team and your membership team, although all those areas that you'd expect to be at a football club, as well as those that you'd expect at any other normal business, they're more my responsibility. So.
Mm-hmm. So I assume engagement is, I'm going to say something you may completely say is wrong, is easy because everyone's there for the club. Is it that easy? So is employee engagement a priority for you, or is that largely taken care of? And if it is taken care of, what is the priority for you?
I think that AFL clubs, and I think anyone really involved in sport, if you've got people passionate about your product, it's a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah.
So I just mentioning before we got started here about how exciting it is this time of year to be in the finals. And whether you're the HR manager or you're the accountant or you're the marketing person, everyone gets excited and can really buy into that product. So I think that you've got a sort of a head start.
Yeah.
We're not sort of, you know, a bank or something that might be a little bit less exciting or delivering a less exciting product. So from there, I think as long as you can keep people engaged, you are delivering a product that people are passionate about. And when you go to a game, you know, particularly, you know, last week's a great example. We broke the record for the amount of people at an AFL game in Sydney, which was fantastic at the SCG. So getting there, sitting in your seat, you know, with your beer and your pie and looking around and seeing that you've somehow contributed in your way to what was being delivered there with 46,000 people cheering and really getting passionate about that. And you can see that emotion.
Yeah.
It's a really exciting thing that you can't get in many other places. And that's one of the reasons why I'm still there.
Yeah.
You know, coming through as a grad, the stats had suggested I'd probably have moved on to two more jobs since starting at the Swans. But that exciting product and the development opportunities that I've been given as well in terms of the growth of HR in the industry has meant that I'm still fulfilled and still really enjoying the product. And the other thing is, once you've been somewhere for that long, that if you're doing the bulk of the recruitment, you end up in a situation where you're surrounded by people that you've employed.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And that's really cool. Mm. When people are doing great things and you're proud of achievements in different areas of the club, and you do feel as though you've contributed in some way to that. So that's a really exciting part of it as well.
Yeah. How do you do recruitment? How do you guys go about it? Because I assume there's a huge fan factor there. How do you manage that or accommodate, I imagine, a large amount of unsolicited applications?
Yeah, one of the hardest parts is actually, it's not getting people to apply, it's actually just getting through to the quality applications.
Yeah. And
I'm sure we're not alone in that, but there are a number of people that, and obviously I certainly won't be naming names, but there's certainly a large chunk of people where...
Lorena Healy.
I see there...
I did write a letter to the Essendon Football Club when I was a teenager asking for a job.
You get a response?
No, I didn't get a response.
Wowzers.
I know, poor candidate care.
The rot had already set in at Essendon, clearly.
Yeah, clearly.
Dodged a bullet, Lorena.
Sorry,
back to you, Scott.
Yeah. So there are a number of people that, regardless of whether the role's the CEO or, you know, the accounts person or the sponsorship person or the marketing person, they'll just put an application in.
Yeah.
Because they're just passionate about the Swans.
They want to work at the Swans.
They just want to work at the Swans. And whilst we love that passion and people being really proud about the club, at the same time, we've obviously got to make sure, like any other business, that we've got people with the highest skills possible. Yes, there needs to be some sort of commitment, ideally, to the club and sense of belonging and already before they've started, ideally. But at the end of the day, it's making sure the right skill set's there.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's better to bring people in that actually don't know anything about football, because
we've heard this before.
Yeah,
Tell us about that. Why?
Yeah.
Well, you get a completely fresh perspective,
right?
And it also prevents people coming in and just agreeing with what's already been happening.
Okay, not so, like kind of honouring it too much. Mm.
Yeah, or feeling that because they have respect for the club and that's the way the club does things, that it's wrong to challenge it or it's wrong to come up with a new way. And I just, if someone comes in, they don't have that deep connection and commitment to the club, so they're not really a sort of ironed on, rusted on fan, then sometimes they can bring a really great insight that can make us change for the better. So you need a balance. Obviously, it's great to have people that are passionate about the club, but at the same time, you also need people to feel like they're in an environment where they can contribute fresh ideas.
Yeah. Can I ask you about the Swans culture? Because it is revered in the industry. You know, people refer to it as the Bloods culture, the old South Melbourne days. But I think it's interesting because, you know, from an HR point of view, we might have all worked in a place that's got a really strong culture legacy, but you have to challenge that over the years and make sure it's still right and, you know, it's still leading to success. Can you tell us about the Bloods culture and how you keep that at the heart of the club?
As much as the Bloods culture and the fact that there is a lot of media discussion around what the culture's like at the Swans, that can be a huge advantage, obviously, because it's a great... basically, the media become almost your brand ambassador, which is fantastic. That being said, I also worry that people buy into some of the hype around that and that they have extraordinary expectations about what it's going to be like walking through the doors.
Yeah.
So as much as it's great to get people on board, if you don't live up to it, it can very quickly turn to disenchantment.
Yeah.
And we absolutely want to avoid that. Now, in terms of how that all developed, we've had some fantastic on-field leaders over the years, great captains, you know, come and gone over the years, some still involved, some not so much, but were so instrumental in building that culture from the start. So from that and from the football playing group, really, that Bloods culture developed. And, you know, that more or less speaks for itself. A lot of it is tied within the playing group to on-field behaviours and how what's an expectation of every player that walks onto the ground. But I'm trying my best, and I think the club's generally pretty good at it, is trying to expand that to a corporate sense as well.
Yeah.
So we're obviously not going to go out and thump the opposition or anything like that. But there's still transferable values that they hold dear that the club should more broadly reflect. And by and large, I think we do a great job. But it is just inevitably different, though, the way you go about things from an on-field playing perspective to a corporate sense.
Yeah, of course.
So that's just an unavoidable difference that you'll have. But overall, I think, and it's overwhelmingly conveyed to me through exit interviews and things like that when people are leaving, that when asking them when they've decided to resign what they like best about the Swans, 95% of the time they talk about the culture. And that, so long as that continues to happen, I'll be fairly comfortable that we're still doing a decent job of translating that across the business. We're also just going through the process now of what we call a health check, which is every 2 years we run a full employee survey. And that's broken down into several categories, but culture's one, and that's often an area where we poll really highly in comparison to some of the other areas. So the most recent data that I've got, which is very, very new, so it's only about a month old, really sort of cements home to me that's still a really core strength that the Sydney Swans has. And so long as we can continue to maintain that, we should be attracting good people, and then hopefully when they get to the club, they'll enjoy their experience, and hopefully we live up to the expectations they have.
I saw Paul Roos speak about, I don't know, I'd say maybe about 8 or 9 years ago, but he was at the Swans at the time. So I may have my timing wrong. You two know a lot more about football than I do.
Accurate.
Yes. Oh, good. That's good. and he was speaking to in a HR convention and talking about measurement. And I must say, I went along thinking, yeah, the sporting analogy kind of thing in my head. But I actually did find it fascinating. The way, wasn't just what we measured. I thought we were just going to be overwhelmed with, oh, we measure this and then we measure this. And I was going to sit there and go, yeah, well, a company is not always like a sporting team. But it was he spent a lot of time on the way we interpret it and the way we give feedback to the player so that they use it to play better as opposed to use it to feel bad or feel demoralised or feel worse than their peers or what have you. Is that either the measurement or any of the learnings? Do you have learnings like that come off the field into the way you work with employees, or am I just taking that a bit too far?
No, I think so. I had about 1 year, maybe 18 months with overlap with Paul. Now, he wasn't the senior coach at the time that I started, but he was the head coach of our academy.
Okay.
Which is basically our program for boys, and as of next year, also girls. So we've got a girls program starting there.
Yay.
Which is great. Yeah, so.
I know.
It's exciting.
Like 20 years too late for me. Oh, and I don't have any skills. But besides that.
Sounds like my football career
too. She was a legend 20 years ago, though. You've really missed something there.
Very good. So I do have some overlap with Paul, but I think what he's largely credited for is the empowerment of the playing group.
Right.
And it's at the time, it was considered a very modern coaching approach.
Yeah.
And that was actively encouraging feedback and contribution from the playing group.
Yeah.
Which is not uncommon in HR either. We absolutely want a flow of communication direct between staff and their managers. And
yeah, right.
If that conversation's happening, it avoids issues around performance management time because both the employee and the employer or the manager are absolutely aware of any challenges before it gets to that point, before it's allowed to be bottled up and escalate. But in terms of management, and measurement, a lot of that, particularly in the player situation and increasingly I think now from a staff point of view as well, is around, and I think there's a greater awareness more broadly in the industry around dealing with each individual differently, and you get better results taking the effort to tailor your approach depending on the person you're dealing with.
Yeah.
That's huge now amongst the players. Each player would be looked at and treated in a different manner. But
yeah.
And it's about getting the best out of them. And
yeah.
That's absolutely something that can be translated across to staff.
Mm.
So we're blessed and we have had for a long time a clinical psychologist as part of our team. So that advice has been ongoing now for probably 10 years, I would say,
at
our club. And we're increasingly getting that expertise translated across to staff. And this year, to be honest, has been one of the most exciting in that sense, because I'm seeing staff actively engage in the same way that it took us a while to get the players to. So they're quite actively accessing the services that we can provide them.
Wow.
They're more than happy to come and speak to me or their manager, I think, more often about issues that they're having. And that really allows a greater environment for us to be able to get the best out of our employees and ensure that their well-being is being looked after as well.
That's fascinating what you bring up, because there is quite a movement, whether it be performance reviews, whether it be 360 surveys, whatever, away from treating people as a lump of people and treating people as individuals, isn't there? And a lot of these programs that are treating everybody the same are really being questioned.
Yeah.
And so that's really interesting that on the sporting field, that's the way you get the best performance. Yeah, it's fascinating that doing that. I guess it makes sense, like you want to be treated as an individual, yet so much of HR is set up to not treat you as an individual.
Yeah, and as soon as you start talking about the process of HR, you think efficiency, how do you cater for the masses by doing one thing? So it's sort of set up to do the opposite.
Yeah.
Do you, is that, because one of the things we were keen to talk to you about was a diversity action plan. Is that linked? Because obviously diversity and inclusion go hand in hand and treating everyone like they're individuals. Is that, have I just tried to make a segue out of something that isn't segueable?
It sounded really good though.
Yeah.
I was high-fiving you from all the way over here. Just would have taken Scott out in the process.
The Diversity Action Plan, or the DAP as we call it, that is probably one of the more exciting initiatives that I've been involved in my whole time at the club. So there's four key pillars to our DAP. And that's multicultural inclusion, a disability empowerment, the advancement of women, and LGBTIQ pride.
Mm.
Wow.
And
good
across,
pillars.
Yes, across those four pillars, we're really excited and proud of the work that we've been able to do. One of the more obvious elements to that for us this year was that we hosted the Pride Game.
Yeah.
Which was such...
That's right.
Such an exciting event.
Yeah.
The support internally that we got, and buy-in from our staff and the playing group, was immense, probably much more than we thought that we would. And our membership fan base, I think it's obviously a very hot political area at the moment around marriage equality and other bits and pieces, but overwhelmingly the feedback from our membership and our support base was so positive. And even now, some of the changes that you see on match day, yes, the Pride Game in itself was a huge day and obviously branded up and we really pushed that agenda. But even now, off the back of that game, the rainbow flag flies at every SCG home game.
Oh, really?
Just something simple like that.
Yeah.
We get emails from people that
that's been really
members
cool.
for 20 years saying it's now finally that they actually feel so much more involved and linked and connected to our football club. And that's an amazing thing. It doesn't take much for us to do to really send that message home. And not only the Sydney Swans, but the AFL itself and all the AFL clubs as high-profile sporting organisations, we've got nearly 60,000 members this year, we actually do have a role that we can play, a constructive
big
role.
Reach,
And we're not forcing political messages down people's throats, but we just want... if there's something strongly and passionately that the club believes in and our players believe in and our board believes in, then we should convey it. And that's where I think you'll see over the next few weeks as well, we'll do more in the space of having some sort of contribution on behalf of the club in the marriage equality debate. But
unreal.
More broadly than that, yes, those other pillars are also extremely important. I think in year one, giving the Pride Game is a rare opportunity for us to really showcase that pillar, then we've done that. That'll be ongoing, but obviously the other pillars as well are requiring significant amount of effort from us, and you'll see that over the course of the DAP, that really being a visible thing from us, that we want to be more active in our community, we want to be more accepting of all people. And the changes internally as well. So it's not just an external sort of awareness program. It's also about changing policy. So there's already steps to be taken and have been taken to improve how diverse and inclusive we are as a club as well and as an employer from an HR perspective.
Mm. Wow, that is amazing. Is the detail on the website?
Yes. So if you jump on the website, both our DAP, our Diversity Action Plan, sits alongside our RAP, which is our Reconciliation Action Plan.
Yep.
And we're very proud of both.
Yeah, you should be.
And you can click through to that. It'll take you through to the document itself so you can have a good read about the initiatives that we've gotten.
Yeah, I will.
I'm always happy to talk about those two policies because they're things we're really, really proud of.
Yeah, and it's so easy to sit on the fence or think, you know, somebody else will do that. But it's brave, but it's just makes sense, doesn't it? Because it is what your supporters want you to do.
Yeah.
Well done, Scott.
Thank you very
really
much.
Good talking
Thank you,
to
Scott.
You.
We could go forever. I've got a million more questions.
Yeah, the danger is she'll move into territory that's...
We'll go back talking about the bombers again.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe next year.
Maybe.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Well, Megan's a Melbourne supporter.
I'm a
Should
Melbourne
talk
supporter,
about that?
So I don't even worry about it anymore. I don't live the roller coaster life.
You
of
nearly
Lorena.
Got there. You nearly got there.
Well, that was, you know, I was one of the, yeah, I got my thing in the mail telling me how I could get my finals tickets.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So bad.
Mine arrived later, even. A few I'd seen on Instagram, and then mine arrived about a week after that. And I was like, okay, really?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
It was even Keep a second wave they didn't stop.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Thank you,
Not
Scott.
A worry. Thanks for having me.
We farewell you back into Sydney sun.
Beautiful.
All right. Thank
Thanks,
you.
See you.
Bye-bye. So, Lorena, another episode in the can, as they say.
In the can.
I don't know. Do they say that in a digital
world? I feel
like
I've heard that somewhere before. At the end of a movie.
I am off to explore the sunny terrain of Sydney.
Oh, the vistas.
Please don't come within 100 metres as per the
restraining order.
The official.
I did hear
is
you.
Is it what is it
AVO.
Called? AVO, as per the AVO.
You did mention, you did really enunciate the I am off to see Sydney.
Yes, yes. So,
subtle cue.
Yeah. Oh, good. Mm. Oh, as if the legal letter wasn't enough. Anyway, come on, let's go. Let's go and do Sydney type things.
Let's do it.
Well done today.
Well done to you too.
And before we do that, Lorena, in the spirit of Sydney and live things, we're live, baby, live. Do you like that?
I do like
it. It's got an In Excess thing about it.
Yeah. All the best things do.
20th of November, we are live podcasting. You can get your tickets. I'm not quite sure where you go to get your tickets. I would go to the website, www.bobgroup.com.au. Get them now.
Get them now before
they go. I think there's some left. Anyway, I'll see you soon.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.